Hey everybody, it's Aiden O'Neill from the Richmond Spiders, and you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, and one of my Hopkins homeboys, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, we have another jam-packed show this week. There are incredible top 20 matchups. We're going to preview six. There's actually going to be eight. And our friend and Inside Lacrosse contributor, Craig McMichael, will join us as our guest analyst. And we'll interview Richmond All-America attackman and leading scorer, Aiden O'Neill, in our player interview this week. Great show coming your way. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, we're recording during the day this week. You are in Denver, Colorado for on assignment?
On assignment in Denver, Colorado. Yes. Where it is 65 degrees, by the way.
Yeah, well, that could change in the next hour.
And it
could
be what I'm saying is it's been in the 60s all week, which has been awesome.
Yes, but if you're familiar with the weather on the Front Range, it could change at any minute.
Yeah, listen, okay, I just got out of the Baltimore area, which totally sucks weather-wise. Can you just work with me for a second there, meteorologist Mike, and let me have a moment? Well, nice weather.
You enjoy it while you can, is what I'm saying. It reminds me of you being in Denver this time of year when Inside Lacrosse used to do the Mile High Classic.
Right.
University of Denver would sort of help us host that. We'd invite three other teams to come west for that game in the Broncos Stadium. We had Duke there. We had Loyola, Notre Dame. I think we did it like two, three years. I don't remember. But we would go out there on occasion for site visits, meet with the Denver staff, meet with the stadium staff, the Broncos staff, Outlaws people too, and talk about, you know, the upcoming game stuff. There was one time we went out in the fall. And we were doing a stadium tour, and it was probably like 75, 80 degrees on a Wednesday afternoon. I got sunburned. I remember like having to roll up my sleeves and getting a little sunburn. It's probably in like October, November. 2 hours later, we had to change our hotel, which was near the University of Denver, out to by the airport because a blizzard was coming. And when we woke up the next morning, there was a foot of snow on the ground, and we were lucky to get out of Denver. So, to say
you're in the higher altitude, so you're closer to the sun, you're closer to God. I've experienced that as well, and I did the Mile High Classic with Jamie Monroe. It was Loyola Air Force, and then Denver Notre Dame, and Notre Dame won on an overtime goal. It was an exciting game. And then I called the World Games out here, and to your point, we were in like a scaffolding on the field where it was set up for broadcast, and we saw weather coming in, and we're like, oh, we have a few minutes to get down, and that thing was on top of us before you knew it. Like, when you see it in the mountains, all of a sudden it doesn't take long to roll in on you. And then last one, Denver, North Carolina, I did their first round game a few years, it's been a while now, but it was, you know, it was a May evening, early May evening, where it was 70 degrees, and then the next morning, barely got out of here because, you know, probably 8-10 inches of snowfall. So I'm well aware. Just let me enjoy the weather while I'm out here. And, you know, you look nice and cozy. You look like you're sunburned now, actually. Is that the makeup?
It's probably me doing shoveling outside in the bright, bright sun. We got another snowstorm on Sunday here in Maryland. And that was fun. And it's supposed to snow next week, too. So
are you serious?
Yeah, like 3-4 inches one day, a couple inches the next day. So we didn't have school here on Monday again. So it's it just keeps changing. But it's pretty much cleared out. It shouldn't affect the games this weekend, which is great. And let's get to that. Let's get right to it. We had six teams receive votes for number one in this week's Kane media poll at Inside Lacrosse, which is – that's never happened before. Lots of interesting games coming up, including many, many top 20 matchups. So let's get to our game previews. And for the previews and the rest of the show, I'd like to welcome in a friend of the pod and the writer of the weekly watch column every Friday on InsideLacrosse.com, Craig McMichael. Craig, I feel like I've known you forever. Welcome to the DeFly and Dixie podcast.
Thank you, guys. And I want to wish you a happy 9 years. I've been a longtime listener, obviously, and now first time contributor, which is great. But obviously love interacting with you guys. And it's Jersey Day today at school, so I had to wear my Hopkins Lax World jersey to make sure I fit in with the Homewood Homies. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for representing. So he's got like an old wide mesh Hopkins 15 jersey on. Who are some of the great 15s
Ryan
that have worn that? Yeah.
Brian Wood.
Probably the most notable, Brian Wood.
Yep. I like it too. Yeah, what is first time, long time. Like you said, you know, long time fan, time contributor. First time, long time. Call in before they get, you know, ridiculed.
So, Craig, for our listeners, give us a little background. How did you go from like Michigan lacrosse junkie to regular contributor at Inside Lacrosse?
So it's been listening to you guys. It's been interacting with Terry. I remember like Kyle Devitt and Dan Abern doing like, you know, Chasing the Goal like forever ago. Obviously reading Quinn stuff. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, I started contributing, was doing stuff like totally on my own, and then has slowly built up into the game. I've written for like Lax All-Stars, Lacrosse Playground, and got lucky enough to get into the weekend watch. And to me, it's so much fun because it allows me to kind of share that passion and kind of give that outsider's view. Again, I grew up in Detroit, played at NAIA, University of Michigan, Dearborn. So, you know, definitely coming at it from a different perspective. But like I said, just honestly, it's through guys like you, and it's a great thing. Like I love listening to you guys, but I consider you guys friends as well. You know, it's gaining all that knowledge and sharing with everybody.
Well, thank you for joining us. And there's some great games to preview. I want to remind everybody that the game previews are brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm, specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. And Dix, I know you haven't been home for a little bit, but I am rocking a brand new Simplicity Group vest from our friends at Simplicity Group. It is sweet. It's really, you're gonna like
looks
this.
Great.
It's the best one yet.
Yeah. I'll hopefully I'll get one. Hopefully it's waiting for me once I get back home, get back east.
Erica's going to be like, never showed up. And then you'll see her like walking a dog
pretty much wearing
it around the neighborhood or something. All right, let's get to the games. It starts with two great games on Friday. Number six, Syracuse, they're 3-1. They are traveling to do the home and home with Princeton and Penn this weekend. They'll play at number seven, Princeton, at 4:00 on Friday. Princeton's 1-1 after their big win against Maryland. It's on ESPN Plus, and the Orange are a 1.5-point favorite for this one, and the over-under is 25.5. Dixie, I'll let you start. What are your thoughts on this game?
So you've got Syracuse coming in after suffering their first loss of the season last week against Harvard. Princeton righted the ship with a win on the road. First time in a long time, they knocked off the University of Maryland, and that kind of fueled the narrative of the week, you know, with all the Ivy League teams winning last weekend. It was, the first week because they start late, they had to knock the rust off and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it was a great weekend for the Ivies. And this will be a replay of last year's NCAA quarterfinal game. I think it was 18-17. So expect high scoring. You know, what'd you say the over-under was in this one?
25.5.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, back when what was it, a couple weeks ago? It was Penn State and Princeton. We were like hammer the over, and it ended up being 13-7. So, but I think that, you know, this Princeton offense is very balanced. They were able to beat Maryland with only, you know, Nate Kibiri only had one assist. So they were very opportunistic. Chad Palumbo looks really, really good. Not only does he play for an Ivy League team that started a little bit late, but he's coming off of a knee injury that he suffered against Syracuse last spring. You know, and then you flip it over to the Orange, and I give Syracuse a ton of credit. The schedule that they're playing is out of this world, super competitive. And this series, the four teams involved over the last couple of years were from the ACC, Duke and Carolina, from the Ivies, it was Penn and Princeton, and those teams traveled down to Tobacco Road. Well, now it's, you know, time to return the favor, and Duke's nowhere to be found, which I think is incredibly disappointing because when you talk about a schedule like Syracuse's. Duke's is you know, kind of the exact opposite this year in terms of the level of competitiveness, at least on paper. But with that being said, Syracuse, you know, I thought that Harvard would beat Syracuse last week because they're facing off so much better. And they were 50-50 against John Mullen. And then, you know, Syracuse's interior defense really let them down against Harvard. They gave up a lot of inside goals. And I thought Jimmy McCool played well. He had 13-14 saves. So it really wasn't on him. It was Harvard was getting shots in really, really good spots. So that's what Syracuse has to prevent. On Princeton, I don't expect Kabiri to only have 1 point, an assist, or a goal either way. So, you know, for Syracuse, they got to try to contain Princeton. And, you know, for the Tigers, it's all about just production and just playing and kind of having that revenge factor on their mind and trying to get back what they lost. You know, you can't get it back fully, but what they lost last spring at Hofstra. So expect a high-scoring affair, fast-paced game. Should be incredibly entertaining.
You look at that game last week, and the narrative coming out of Harvard was, oh, look, Syracuse was outside. They lost again. And to me, I feel that's like a little bit of – I feel it's like tired and almost like that freezing cold take, right? Sure, they lost by one goal, and, you know, it wasn't like they were blown out. But I think, you know, the key for Syracuse, I think a lot of those Harvard goals were done right out of the crease, as you said, Dixie. But it's Jake Spolino was out of short stick D midi. So it's going to be that question of, are those short stick D middies going to be able to kind of hold up against Princeton in order to kind of prevent those slam dunks to put McCool in that bad spot? But if you look at like Princeton, I'm more worried about their defense. You know, you look at what happened with Penn State 2 weeks ago. You've got a Syracuse offense that is high flying, that can spin the ball really quick. If, you know, they're getting the faceoffs, they're starting to ride a little bit. I think that this one could you know, you could see this one getting out of hand relatively quickly. Just because, like, it, for instance, you know, you get last week against Maryland, they only had, say, 13 ground balls. So to me, it's like, this is where I think that, you know, Princeton, this is going to be a really kind of show me of where they're going to be, because they had a lot of preseason hype, but, you know, two big games against Hughes and UNC, who both can score a lot, I think they're going to put a lot of pressure on that Tiger defense.
So, Craig, who do you like in this one?
I like Syracuse.
I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm going to take Tigers in an upset, I guess. But I like the home team, and I think they get a little revenge on Syracuse. All right, in the other game in this sort of series, number one North Carolina will be at number 19 Penn at 5 o'clock. North Carolina is undefeated, rose to number one in the poll this week. This game will be available on ESPN Plus. UNC is a 3.5 goal favorite in this, and the over-under is 24.5.
You look at this one, you know, I think North Carolina is mirroring Syracuse a little bit. First and foremost, they've got an offense that is lights out. Don Petromala, I feel like, coming in the last couple of years, I feel like he's been that time and room guy. This year, I've really seen him, you know, really starting to cut more to the ball and kind of finishing inside. So to me, like that's going to pose problems. Obviously, Owen Duffy is very good, but where North Carolina is going to be beneficial, it's the fact that Wambach allows them to play make it take it between them and the North Carolina ride. You know, you look at last week against Hopkins, that game was close for about 2.5, 3 quarters. But really, that fourth quarter, North Carolina, I feel like the floodgates really opened up. North Carolina had a plus 21 possession, 21 more possessions than Hunt did last week. And it's that ride, it's that face-off. But I think, you know, it's going to be a little bit of an interesting challenge. You know, Penn, when we think about it, under Murphy, they were traditionally, they like to play low scoring. They like to play defense. They kind of stable at that, you know, being very stable. Taylor Ray, I think, is going to be an interesting impact. We've seen the offense start to pick up a little bit, but I think Wambach is going to be challenged. You know, Penn's got two really good faceoff guys, and Ethan Costanza and Quinn Ball. So I think that could make it more of an even fight. I know Hop was without their top logo last week. And, you know, if you look at what Penn did, they had a close loss to Georgia Tech. But what caught my attention last week is they went to Albany and knocked them off. And then they really just took it to Delaware. So to me, this one, I think, will be a little bit closer. I think it's going to give North Carolina a little bit more problems because that offense is going to have to be a little bit more disciplined. What do you think, Dixie?
When you look at Penn, you know, I watched a good part of their Albany game, and there's a couple things that jump out. One is their shooting percentage individually. So Davis Provost, Jackson Maher, Griffin Skane, Ben Beecham, their top three scorers. You're looking at shooting percentages of 39%, 30%, 36%, 39%. Pretty good, you know, when you consider it's such a so far balanced offense that Mike Restivo is directing. And the faceoffs are spot on with regard to what this is going to look like for Brady Wambach versus a week ago. And listen, I really thought that you know, McKee from Hopkins gave Wambach trouble in the first half. And then, you know, Brady kind of settled in and took that game over. But, you know, he'll be facing potentially three faceoff men this weekend. You know, you mentioned Costanzo and Quinn Ball. You know, Mac Eldridge is taking some faceoffs. So it's going to be a challenge at the dot. But Wambach is built for it. I was fortunate enough to have the game with Kark last Friday night and pointed out the fact that Wambach is a triathlete and is in pretty good shape to do those kinds of things. I agree on Petromala. Some of the moves he made last weekend, the one where he had the stick in his right hand, rolled to his left and did a step back. You know, he's really elevated his game. Owen Duffy was fantastic, but they're continuing to get midfield production and they're playing with a high level of confidence. But you got to be wary of now being the number one ranked team in the Kane Inside the Cross media poll. You have to imagine Joe Bresci's downplaying that because we're not even out of February just yet. But that's a nice accomplishment for a team that's had a bumpy ride the last couple of years. And this is going to be a fun game. You know, this will be a fun game. And, you know, I agree with Craig. I think when the schedules came out, you kind of saw everything. You're like, oh, this game might not be, you know, one of the primetime ones on Carolina's schedule, but I think it has become one of them, and it'll be on the road. So you know, get your cheesesteaks, what's the place in Terminal Market with the pork and broccoli rabe sandwich?
Nick's
or something like that. Get them early because this is going to be a fun game for another Friday afternoon or late afternoon game for the Heels.
I think, you know, it's North Carolina's first road game and our first game on turf, but I don't think that slows them down at all. I think they cover 3.5 goals. I think they win this one going away. Craig, what do you think?
I'm going to go with Penn to win this one. I think UNC splits the weekend. I think Hughes comes out 2-0 on the weekend. So
Saturday's games, there's a bunch of good ones, and it's going to start with number 3 Richmond, who's 4-0. They're going to go up to Ithaca and play number 5 Cornell, who's also undefeated. This game is at noon. It's on ESPN+. Cornell is a 1.5 goal favorite. Before we talk about this one, let's bring in our guest this week, Richmond star Aiden O'Neill. Please welcome into the show the Atlantic 10 Conference Offensive Player of the Year and star attackman from the Richmond Spiders, Aiden O'Neill. Aiden, thank you for joining us on the D-Flying Dixie podcast.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's rewind to last year before we start talking about your great start to the season this year. Best season in school history. Richmond, perennial power in whatever conference you're in, whether it's the SoCon or the A-10, regular participants in the NCAA tournament. Last year, you win your first NCAA tournament game on the road at UNC. Take us back to last year and just what that meant to the program and how rewarding it was for you and the guys.
Yeah, it was definitely going to be super memorable. But I really want to shout out my class because I think when we got here, we've kind of been a part of the ascendance of Richmond. So I think we've all really wanted more every year. And I think last year, we were juniors, so I think we had a little more of a spotlight on the team. We were allowed to be like bigger leaders and all that. So I think we've always had those goals. And then as we've grown, being able to like mature and figure out what it takes to win those games. So I really, really want to shout out my class because a lot of us got to come here and play right away. So I think we matured very fast, and I think we all wanted to win those tournament games, and getting close our freshman year, like a little up and down our sophomore year. And then when we were juniors, we really figured it out, and we had great seniors and a great team, obviously. But I really want to shout out my class, because I think we're just such a hungry group, and it definitely propelled us into this year.
All right. So now you guys are off to a great start. You're 4-0, and your class, you're now seniors. You are the ultimate leaders of the team. What was your mindset coming into this season, and what are the expectations? How high are the expectations as you begin 2026?
Yeah, I don't think we'd really put a cap on our expectations, because I think we really do have so much confidence, and we really do have so much belief that I think it's trickled down through the whole team. So even some of the sophomores, some of the freshmen that might not be seeing a ton of minutes and all that, like on the scout team, they're balling and they're trying as hard as they can. So I just think practices have been so competitive, and we're really trying to build that championship environment, that Memorial Day environment. And I think we know we can get there, and we're really just trying to get better each week and learn from victories. Hopefully don't have losses, but we'll learn from the losses if they come. But we're really all about the growth, and we're really working hard. And I don't think any of the guys on the team would really put a cap on what we can accomplish.
A lot of that starts with your coach, Dan Shamati, who is the first and only coach at Richmond, has really set the tone and has believed in this program, saying that we're going to be great here. Why did you pick Richmond? Why did you choose to come play for Coach Shamati? And what kind of culture do you feel like he's established?
Yeah. So back during recruiting, I was originally committed to Utah. And then when the Holmans and Coach Manny were no longer going to be the coaches there, I reopened recruitment, and I just really respected Coach Shamati and his like aggressive coaching style, where he's always played everybody. Like he doesn't patty cake the schedule at all. He's played ACC, Big Ten teams, Ivy League teams, like you name it. Even when Richmond was a younger program, they would open up with like Virginia, go play Maryland, go play Notre Dame, which is the one thing that I really respected. And I think he really believed in me, and I really appreciate that. Especially I really wanted to go play somewhere right away, because I feel like I learned the most from hands-on experience, and he gave me the chance to do that. And I've definitely matured over the years, and I feel like I've learned a lot. So I really appreciate that from him.
Hey, you lead the Spiders offense. You're the leading scorer through the first four games, and the offense has gotten a lot of the headlines. Who are some of the other guys on the attack and midfield units that deserve some recognition?
Yeah, I feel like we have a ton of chemistry on that end. So we got Lucas Littlejohn, who probably, for my money, is, if not the best, one of the best inside guys in the country. He has a really quick and awesome stick. And then Gavin Creo has been playing awesome. He used to be an attackman. He's a middie now. He's winning his matchup all day long. Joe Sheridan, probably the most athletic guy on the team, never doesn't outrun anybody from either a sweep or an alley dodge. And then, yeah, we got a lot of guys playing well. Dan Picard's a sophomore. He's got a ton of swagger. He's playing awesome. And Jack Ricciardi stepped up this year. He's like our lefty attackman this year. So we're getting a lot of production from a lot of different places.
On the other side of the field, your defense is outstanding. Connor Knight, a veteran on your team, but he's been waiting his turn, replacing two-time A-10 goalie of the year, Zach Vigue. What does it mean with that goalie change, the confidence that you have in him and the rest of your defense, and who are some of the other outstanding defenders that are keeping it together on the defensive side?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why our offense has gotten to a point where we're so good. We have to play against those guys every day, and they're so frustrating. Like, I go against Hunter Smith like every day. I've been going against him for 4 years, and it's just a grudge match every day. I think I really appreciate him, and we share insights back and forth. And I know he's made me a lot better. I hope I've made him a little better, but he's a stud. And then Mikey Farrell off ball, I can never throw skip passes past him. He picks everything off. And then I think one guy that's really under the radar is Braden Pennyfeather Stevenson. He's our LSM, and he's a vacuum. He's picking up everything this year. He's crushing it on the wings. He's having such a good start to the year. I really can't compliment him enough. And then Connor Knight, yeah, I think this week was huge for him, because he obviously hasn't played a whole bunch of games. I think he's really settling into that starting goalie role, even more vocally and just confidence-wise. I think he's really settled down, and I don't think any of us really thought we were going to miss a beat with him, just because, I mean, practicing with him for the last 2 or 3 years, he's been so hard to score on in practice, and we all believed in him, and he's kind of proved us right.
I always think like a true testament of like the way a coach runs a program and the way a school is when you see brothers like on the team together. Your younger brother, Evan, is a sophomore on the team.
Yep.
Like, what's it like playing with your brother or continuing to play with your brother? And the fact that what's it say about Richmond that, you know, the O'Neill family is all in on Spiders lacrosse?
Yeah. And my sister is going to be on the women's team next year too. So we got three of us. Yeah. Yeah. So, I love it. I don't know. I was super happy that he chose here. I wasn't super confident that he was during the recruiting process. And then when he made the decision, I was so excited, and it's awesome. He's super versatile. He's played attack and middie this year. So I just think sharing the field with him, it's just that two cents that you don't even have to say anything. You just make eye contact and you know what the other guy's going to do. So it's so fun. I mean, off the field, it's awesome. You got like your built-in best friend hanging around with you all the time. So it's been great. I really couldn't talk about it enough. It's so much fun, and it's really, he's a lot more probably outgoing than I am. I'm probably a little quieter, but we mix great, and it's awesome that we got a whole group of guys that are friends with both of us.
I can only imagine how much
yeah,
fun
it's so fun
to succeed and play well with your brother
yeah,
get a lot of playing time too. So, hey, is there a particular player that you pattern your game after, or some like attackman that you've always enjoyed watching?
So I got two. My two favorite guys to watch are Ryan Drenner and Dylan Malloy, and I feel like I'm kind of right down the middle of those two guys with how I play. But they've definitely been my two favorite my whole life.
Okay. This weekend, you're playing number 5 Cornell. Spiders are number 3 in the country. What do those Richmond need to do to get a W this Saturday?
Yeah, I think going back to that earlier point I made, I think it's all about growth. We're really just finding areas where we might be winning games, but we're finding areas where we can get better, and still haven't played that perfect game, always chasing the perfect game. So yeah, I think a lot of it's going to come down to the middle of the field. They're so good in transition, and their face-off guy is awesome. So I really think it's not going to be decided in between the boxes. I think it's really going to be decided in that clearing, riding, transition offense, transition defense, and that face-off. So I think the middle of the field is really going to decide it.
All right, great answer. Hey, you ready for some quick hitters, some more like
yeah.
fun personal?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. All-time favorite sports team?
I'm a huge Denver Broncos fan, so I'm going to go the 2015 Broncos, the no-fly zone defense.
All right. Now, if you guys, if you're not watching the, like a clip of this, he is wearing a Broncos t-shirt right now. So I'm with you. All right. What is the best Richmond lacrosse tradition?
We got a couple. We play Hey Baby after every win, which is awesome. And we Chipotle Thursdays are a huge hit.
What's your order?
I'm a steak, white rice, guac. I keep it pretty simple. Lettuce, nothing crazy.
Besides men's lacrosse, which Spiders team would you say you have the most friends on?
I mean, I'd probably say men's golf, maybe women's lacrosse, but those two are the big hitters, yeah.
Who's the best lacrosse player in the history of Tabor Academy?
He's there right now. His name's Landon O'Neill.
Oh. Great answer. Very good answer. If your family comes into town, where's the best place to go get food? Where are you going after a game to get some food?
I'll give you two. The my favorite place is East Coast Provisions. I know my mom would agree with me. It's like steak and seafood, but a sneaky place that people probably wouldn't think of is called Angela's. It's this like little Italian place, and you can't even make reservations, so can't really get in there with a family of six all the time, but if we can get in there, it's really good.
Those are always the best spots.
Yep.
All right. Why do we wear number 5?
So number 5 to me means a lot. It's got a really personal backstory. So my older brother passed away when I was younger, and we both share the birthday. He was born March 5th and I was born January 5th. So I rep 5, just kind of thinking about him all the time.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
What's your favorite road venue in the A-10? Where's your favorite place to play on the road?
I'd probably say UMass, just because a bunch of my family can drive to UMass and get a good showing from the O'Neill squad.
All right. Who's the best chef or cook on the Spiders team?
biasly, I'd say Mikey Farrell because I live with him, but Charlie Packard's also a great cook.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the best, how do you rate Richmond lacrosse alumni and parent tailgating?
Oh, 11. It's elite.
I've seen some YouTube videos.
Yeah, and Mitchell Pelkey's a big fan.
Yeah. It looks impressive, for sure. I got to check one of these out. All right, last question. If I were to walk into the Spiders locker room, who's running the aux and what am I going to hear?
I mean, there's such a wide variety. I'll give Brody Murphy the aux because he always got aux during our weightlifting. Like when we're lifting, he's always on it. And you could get anything. If the boys need some energy, he's playing some rap. But there's house music. There's anything. You'll sneaky get like some Tate McRae, Dua Lipa. Like you could get anything. It's really hard to pick.
Oh, great answer. Aiden, thank you so much for taking some time. Thanks for joining the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. Best of luck to you this week against Cornell and throughout the regular season.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Dixie, I love talking to him in this interview. He's one of the – we've interviewed how many players over the years? He was one
a
of
lot.
The – a lot. He was one of the easiest guys to talk to and nailed – the intro in on the first take. So I gave him, he was really excited. He's like, let's go. I think they have something special going on at Richmond. I was thinking, what do they remind me of? They remind me of the Gonzaga's basketball team. Like just sustained excellence, maybe from a smaller conference over the years, but like they're just really good and they're good every year. And it doesn't really matter who the players are. It's just like a culture of winning. And they got something special going on there, and they're going to have their hands full when they go up to Cornell.
I'd agree. And this is a team that's just been getting incrementally better. And remember, we interviewed Dan Shamati a couple seasons ago, and he said, at the time, you know, he said, if we want to be the program we want to be, we got to win Virginia. We've got to be the best team in the state of Virginia, which means beating the University of Virginia. Well, guess what? They did that last year. Then they repeated it. A couple weeks ago this year. So I love the Gonzaga analogy, just like a really solid program with a terrific coach and players that you've really never heard of, or paid attention to. But now you do because they're so talented. But they've been dominant at 4-0 so far, all their wins by 6 goals or more. So this is a team really getting it done. We know defensively they're very solid, offensively incredibly efficient, and really, you know, the first they play a first quarter where they just kind of get to know you a little bit, and then the next three quarters when they have you figured out, that's when they, you know, really turn it on. In particular, the second quarter they have a +12 goal differential. Different animal that they're taking on this weekend in the Cornell Big Red. They faced a real test by coming out here to Denver last weekend and outlasting the Denver Pioneers 11-9. And, you know, that was a Grayson Manning in the goal was at like 80% saves, and they were only giving up 4 goals a game or something like that. And Cornell was able to break through. So, you know, again, a team that lost a lot from last year, Connor Busick, not only lost players, but he lost his defensive coordinator. I expect this one to be single digits. And, you know, I'm looking at like an 8-7, 9-8. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets to 10, maybe a 10-9, maybe the first to 10 wins. But I think, you know, Richmond being up at Schoelkopf, I haven't checked the weather forecast, but if it's anything like the Northeast, it's going to suck. So they've got to get ready for the wind and get ready for the cold and all that other good stuff. Whereas Richmond's been a little bit milder, relatively speaking. But I'm looking forward to this one, and, you know, get ESPN Plus, check it out. You know, all the Ivies do a great job on their productions. And, this is an exciting one for an early season matchup between, like you said, defending national champion. That's still people are kind of holding out a little bit on judgment, which they should because it's still early in the season, and a team in Richmond that has their highest ranking ever in program history.
I think, I don't know if you guys saw it or not this week, but Christian Sweezy had a really good article on Richmond, and he summed it up perfectly. He said this team has no holes. whether you look at offensively or defensively, this team is rock solid. You know, they're led on by short stick D-mid Jack Pillings. He did, you know, a phenomenal job. You look at what they did last year in the quarterfinals against Cornell. They held C.J. Kearse to 2 of 13 shooting. Obviously, you know, we guys talked to Aiden O'Neill just a little bit ago. But Lucas Littlejohn, again, I think like Don Petromala, he is the finisher of that group. He is going to make teams pay. So, and I really think that they have arrived. Kind of like what we saw with Gonzaga. I think D-Fly had a good thing there, where they were sort of slowly building, and then they made it there. To me, this makes sense. And I'm going to guarantee you that if Virginia had their same record and their same results, that Richmond would be number one. If we just switched to the main plates of these two schools, I guarantee that UVA would have that. For Cornell, I was thinking about this week. Albany and Denver, I'm saying, are the quizzes. To me, this is going to be the test. Because, again, Richmond's going to be that total package. They're trying to figure out who their identity as an offense. Wilhelm Furth and Ryan Goldstein are the guys. But what is going to happen when the Wolfpack Richmond defense starts to clamp down on them? Who's going to be that third or that fourth guy that is going to be able to stand up? So, unlike you, Dixie, I'm thinking Richmond wins this one going away. I'm thinking 3-4 goals.
I tell you, the upset here is that Christian Sweezy wrote an article containing Cornell and didn't write about Cornell.
It's true.
It was the connection piece.
Yeah, it's tangentially connected to Cornell. The Cornell, like I said, they're 1.5 goal favorites, but I'm going to go with Craig and take Richmond in this one. I just think they keep it rolling to get revenge on those 2 1-goal losses last year to Cornell. But Dixie, this is the big thing. You know what the over-under is on this? You said it'll be single digits. 26.5. It's the biggest one of the weekend. So are you saying serious? Pound the under?
I'm no good at that kind of stuff, but I'm thinking it's going to be lower scoring. I really think it's going to be a low-scoring game.
That is a lot of goals.
So in the weekend watch, I am tracking like the favorites. I've got all the spreads, and I've got like the over-under. I don't know what Vegas is doing, but it seems like almost on a weekly basis, the under is the way to go on those bets. I track that every week in that. We've been like almost 50-50 so far in 2026. But if we compare those numbers to 25 and 24, almost always we were at the under. It didn't matter if it was, you know, 3-4 inches of snow outside or if it was warm outside.
Yeah, there's a good D-Fly tip for just you guys out there.
D-Fly just took his Bitcoin and just put it on the under. He's a degenerate gambler, by the way.
Stop it. I have not wagered on college.
He is the draft king, is what you're saying?
All right. Let's move on. This is a team we haven't talked about much this year at all. Number 10, Ohio State. They're 5-0. They're in the top 10, playing Georgetown, which slipped after their loss to Notre Dame. They're 1-1. Georgetown's number 12 in the Kane poll. This game's at noon on ESPN+. Georgetown is a 1.5 goal favorite. Craig, what do you think about this one?
So there's a reason we haven't talked about Ohio State. There's a reason we haven't talked about Duke. Dixie brought it up. Duke's schedule to this point has been relatively weak and very un-Duke-like. The same thing can be true for Nick Meyer's Ohio State squad. Yes, they are 5-0, but their wins are against Detroit Mercy, Cleveland State, Bellarmine, Air Force, and High Point. It's just not good enough. And when you look at, you know, out-of-conference records and RPI, which are going to be super important for those records, the Big Ten just has not had enough oomph or enough key victories to kind of go there. So to me, this is that first big test for the Big Ten to finally say, hey, look, we're not number three. We can actually make a statement. Now they've got Caleb Fayock and Big Tasty in net. He can be that difference maker. But I'm going to give you one to look at. You know, Russell Melendez transferred to Ohio State, but he's battling the injury bug. You want to look at a Midwest guy? That's why you brought the Midwest guy on the podcast. Caleb Hocker from St. X. He was like Mr. Ohio 2 years in a row out of St. Xavier down in Cincinnati. He's fantastic. He's starting to contribute. So I know that Dixie, once we start calling all the Big Ten games, Caleb Hocker is going to be a big one he's going to be looking at. And for Georgetown, you look at it, this to me, I'm going to consider their first test as well. You look at their first two games, Hopkins and Loyola both were snowed out. That's going to mess up, you know, we're all locked in, ready for the game, and then we're going to go somewhere else. And then last week, They're supposed to go to Arlada. They're supposed to play Notre Dame, which we're all looking for. But you know what? Friday night, big snowstorm comes. Notre Dame's like, oh, sorry, we got to go to Loftus. And that, to me, is a great advantage for Notre Dame. I am not taking away anything from Notre Dame, but I am. If I'm the committee, I'm looking at that result and I'm putting it to the side. That is a clear advantage for the Irish when they're inside Loftus. They're used to the lighting. They're used to that. They're used to that area. That was a total difference maker, and I think you saw that with Anderson Moore, had an uncharacteristically bad day. So to me, what I'm looking forward to, this one's going to be outside. We're not going to be stuck indoors anywhere. And I think this is going to be that first test where we're going to actually see who is Ohio State, who is Georgetown.
Craig, I agree. And, you know, with Ohio State, this is where their schedule gets real, quote unquote,
yep.
as they play Georgetown's and the Notre Dame's and getting ready for Big Ten competition. You know, Ohio State built on defense. They can score goals, but when you talk about that defensive unit, what are they going to look like in a step up in competition against a Georgetown team minus Bobby Van Buren? You know, for my money, he was, you know, obviously a leading contender for the Schmeiser, shared it last year with Sean Light. But to your point, you know, this is going to be their first real test, and that defense will be tested. Georgetown's been successful facing off, so they're going to get possessions. And then the Hoyas, you know, you kind of took the words right out of my mouth. What team has faced more baloney in the first part of this season? And let's just call it what it is, whether it's right, wrong, indifferent. You know, Notre Dame's kind of become the public enemy number one in the lacrosse world. One, they moved the game inside. Two, they don't stream it when they could have, for whatever reason. I know there's a lot of theories out there, and I don't know why it wasn't streamed. If you guys do, you can enlighten me. But, you know, just kind of a poor, you know, poor hosts, if you will. But you got to do what you got to do for the weather. But that Georgetown team having their first two games postponed, canceled, whatever you want to call it, they finally get out, play against Penn, and then, you know, they go to Notre Dame, and it just turns into just, you know, I don't know. I don't want to use the word joke, but pretty close to it. So in any event, Georgetown obviously looking for to get back on track. Ohio State, they might be one of the few teams, if not the only team, that dropped in the Kane and saw the cross media poll simply because of other people's results. And they're, you know, like you said, their schedule's been not as challenging as some others. So this will be fun. And I think this has the potential. I'm thinking about like a 13-11 kind of game, whoever's going to win this one.
I have a quick question before D-Fly comes in. I got into a little Twitter argument the other day. They were talking about the Kane media poll. And it's like, where do you put Maryland, who's 1-2, versus Ohio State and Duke, which are undefeated? And to me, like, this goes back to my college football thing. Just because you win, not all wins are created equally. Not all losses are the same thing. And I flat out said, I had Maryland ahead of both, you know, Duke, and I had them ahead of both Ohio State, because based on that body of work, I think that they played a more quality schedule, but they played better. Maryland's got a 2-goal loss and a 1-goal loss.
Yeah, I think the way you rate them is who do you think is the best team, and if they played head to head, how would that go? So I agree with you. You rank them. It's not based on just your gaudy record. It's like the Miami of Ohio basketball team. They're undefeated right now, but they're like 85th in KenPom. There's teams that are way ahead of them in like analytics ratings, whose coaches are going to get fired this year. That doesn't make them good. They've played 3 NAIA schools, right? So like their schedule's trash, and comparable thing. All right, I am taking Georgetown in this one. It's their first home game. They're ready. They're coming off of, again, fluky, a whole schedule. They're ready to go. I'm taking the Hoyas in this one. Craig, who do you like?
Hoyas sacks the baby.
Yeah, okay. Speaking of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, they are 3-0. They've risen to number 2 in the Kane poll, and they will take on an angry and frustrated University of Maryland Terrapins team, who's ranked number 9 in this week's poll. That game is at noon. It's going to be in College Park. And the Irish are 1.5 goal favorites.
Interesting. I mean, we talked you know, after the result of against Princeton last weekend, it's first time since 2016 Maryland's lost two games in a row. When's the last time they lost three in a row? That's, you know, we're going to have to.
I did some research this morning. Go ahead. So whether or not it's true, Maryland has not lost three in a row since April of 2006 when they lost to Navy, Johns Hopkins, and Virginia. And then, of course, because, you know, you have to find out when is the last time Tills has lost three in a row. March of 08 when he was at Harvard, Bucknell, Duke, and Cornell.
Wow. Good job, Chris. I knew it was a good reason we brought him along this week.
That's it. That was it. I'm out.
No, that's great stuff. And I just don't see Maryland losing this game. I don't see them losing three goals or three games in a row under the John Tillman watch. Now, look, I just did a little bit of a backhanded review of Notre Dame. This team can play. You know, this team is exceptional. They're so well coached. They've got talent and, you know, the big names all over the field. The one kid in our preseason All-American voting, I had Will Angrick as a second or third team All-American. I can't remember which, but I just feel like he's making the jump this year. I thought he made a nice jump last year. He becomes even more of a focal point in 26. So I just think he's a real key cog to Notre Dame and their success in 2026. You know, Maryland, after they lost to Princeton, I got several texts saying that they need a new goalie. You got to start the freshman. But Brian Ruppel, if you look at the way Maryland's playing defense, it's not your typical Maryland defense. You lost Colin Burlace. You have Will Schaller, who was terrific last weekend against Nate Kibiri. But, you know, you've got some other guys in there. Mikey Alexander and Peter Lake are first-year starters. So they're still getting their terrapin, you know, shells wet with respect to being main guys in College Park. And I know Mikey Alexander played a ton at Yale, but that's a defense last year that was not good. And Peter Lake had spot duty last year. When you're constantly out there, it's a different ballgame. Also, you know, the shorties for Maryland are still rounding into form. So I think this is going to be a real good test for where each team is. And regardless of the result, you know, Notre Dame wins, Maryland loses, or vice versa, how do they handle that outcome moving forward?
Yep. I think if you look at it, right, Tillman's probably the best in college across it using the transfer portal. And he's constantly bringing like an influx of talent. He does a good job. But here's the thing. Unlike an Ohio State, which has, you know, we talked about a lighter schedule, Tillman's going right for him. He has played an extremely difficult schedule, and these are young guys. Or I shouldn't say young. I should say inexperienced guys with playing each other. They're not sure where they're at on the field. It looks a hell of a lot different in practice than it does in the game. And I think that they're constantly going. So I know that Tillman's got the surface, and I fully expect them to figure that out. And for, you know, Notre Dame, to me, again, this is their first test of the season. They started out with Marquette, which was, I think that game was a little higher scoring than I thought. I think that was like I think Marquette almost scored, I think they had like 10 goals. And then they played Bellarmine, where they scored 29 goals, which, you know, looks impressive, but I think is a little more provocative than it is profound. So, like, you know, I'm looking at Notre Dame this week, and I want to see, you know, what does Josh Yago look like? You know, that's a great story. Kid transferred in from the Air Force. He is still a member of the Air Force. In order to go to the game in Maryland, I was reading this week, he has to take a leave in order to be able to travel to these various games. And basically, he is making sure he is not going out at different times, so that way when they're playing in Memorial Day weekend, that he's able to go and he's able to fully participate with the team. So to me, like, this is that Notre Dame's first test. And I'm going to have some questions more about the Notre Dame defense than I am the Maryland defense. Because, again, I look at that Marquette score and I'm like, that doesn't quite add up. That doesn't quite compute.
So who are you picking in this one, Craig?
I've got the Terps.
I'm going to take the Terps, too. I think they end their two-game losing streak and Notre Dame their first loss. And in our final game on Saturday at 3 o'clock, number 13, Johns Hopkins Blue Jays, who are 3-1, will travel down to Charlottesville to take on number 14, Virginia, who's 2-1 in the Doyle Smith Cup game, Dixie. This game's on, you see it on the ESPN networks. Virginia is a 1.5 goal favorite in this one. What do you think, Craig?
So when I look at this one, eye-popping stat from Quinn's top 20 this week. Hop is 7-20 versus the top 10 since 2021. That blew my mind when I read that. I think I sent that to you earlier this week, D-Fly. But 7-20. And, like, you know, you look at that matchup last week against UNC, and Hopkins is having trouble winning the one-on-one matchups. It seems like, you know, they're having difficulty kind of running by people. And if Collison and Chauvet are not hopping or they're not scoring goals, then Hopkins is going to struggle a little bit. Last week, Collison was 0 for 8 shooting. Chauvet was 1 for 6. They're looking at guys like Jimmy Ayers, who, you know, and Charlie Eiler, who kind of are those spark and those fire guys. But they need more out of Collison Chauvet. I was lucky enough, I got to coach against Collison when he was at St. Michael's College School up in Toronto. So I got to see him firsthand, know everything about him. But I want to see more out of him. Like, we've been seeing more out of him, and I know that there's a heavy burden out of him. But again, if you know, you should expect that more, where he should be pumping in 2 or 3 goals. You contrast that with Virginia. Virginia is now entering year 2, where you look at it, this does not look like the Virginia Cavaliers that were playing and winning national championships back to back. Something seems missing. Brendan and McKay Millen are fantastic, but defensively and goaltending, you just have a lot of questions. So, you know, I don't want to hit the panic button. I don't want to sound, you know, like a hot take artist. But the loser of this game, like, is this really going to determine the season? As you saw last year, Hop, you know, lost the last six of their games. But this is, you know, totally an important one. But, like, to me, I feel like this one's big.
It is definitely going to be a barometer for how the rest of these seasons go. At least that's what you think. But I will go back to a year ago, Craig, and Hopkins did beat Virginia at Homewood to set themselves up and feel pretty good about themselves. And then what happened still happened. And then Virginia, obviously, you know, it wasn't a banner year in Charlottesville either. But I do feel like the winner of this game gets some confidence, gets some momentum. Yeah, Virginia can score goals. You know, they can score, but defending is the problem. And I guess, you know, the Blue Jay faithful are wondering the status of Joe Hobot with respect to the lower body injury. Is he back? He makes a difference, or at least he did in the first 3 games for Johns Hopkins. And again, they've got depth at faceoff now. I thought John McKee did a really nice job coming in to, you know, to Chapel Hill and battling Brady Wambach. But, you know, Hopkins defensively last weekend just kind of fell apart. Dosh Lamidi was under fire the entire game. And the clearing that was so good in the first 3 games of the season, Carolina took advantage of you know, several Hopkins miscues, one of which turned the tide of the game when Parker Sorensen threw the ball back to Lamidi and Don Petromaa was there to pick it off and scored. And, you know, Hopkins had a lot of momentum up until that point and kind of, you know, I don't want to say that they had the game under control, but they certainly had the upper hand at that time, and then it just shifted after that play. But I have been impressed with the Hopkins midfielders, in particular Rawson. You know, I think he's playing at incredibly high level. They just have to continue to bring along the second midfield to develop, get more confidence, and contribute more. And then, you know, Virginia, it's just about defense right now because, again, they can score. You mentioned the Millens and Truett Sunderland, and they've got other guys, and they went beat up on Stony Brook to get back on the right track. But this should be a great environment in Charlottesville. It is on, I think it's on ESPN Plus. Doyle Smith Cup is always great. You know, trophy games are always awesome, and I knew Doyle, a good guy, and did so much for lacrosse statistic-wise. So, you know, I think this game just comes down to execution and confidence. Who can have, you know, the more muscle in this game to get it across the finish line?
I'm going to go with the Blue Jays in this one. I think they pull off the upset in Charlottesville. Craig, what do you think?
I think Collison and the Blue Jays hear Craig's bulletin board material, and Collison scores the game winner in OT and says, "Take that, McMichael."
That's perfect. All right, there's some great games, as we've talked about this weekend, up and down the schedule. Lots of top 20 matchups, but there's some really other good ones that we didn't even get to. So make your plans and get in front of the screens or in person to some of these games and enjoy them. All right, guys, it's time for a give and go. Dixie, I know you're on an assignment here, and I don't know if you have to do these networking type of things that sometimes can be corny. I had to do one for work last weekend for something I was doing. And one of the questions to get to know you a little bit better, you know, was like, if you had a superpower, what is it? Or if you wanted one, what would it be? Right. So today's topic is superheroes, right? So when I was a kid, I couldn't wait for Saturday mornings to get up and watch the Super Friends cartoon every Saturday morning. I didn't realize that there was this thing called like DC Comics versus Marvel Comics and like different universes of things. I certainly knew that there was Spider-Man and like the Hulk, and they were superheroes because they had TV shows. But I was a Super Friends guy. So like Superman is my guy. He's my number one. Aquaman, fantastic character. Batman, Robin, like that whole group of Super Wonder Woman, Flash. Those were my guys. I turn it over to you guys. If you rank your superheroes, and by far, like Superman, his talents in my, like being able to fly, being X-ray vision, super hearing, heat vision, you know, just the strongest man on Earth. Like there's, you can't, like nobody compares to him in terms of in superheroes, in my opinion. But if you had to rank your top three superheroes, I want to hear your rankings and why you're a fan of those characters. I'll let you.
Greg, you go ahead, man. You go first. Guess first.
All right. First and foremost, I'm going with Batman number one. And I'm thinking, like, in my head, when I think of Batman, I'm thinking Christian Bale Batman. Not only do you have the cool voice, but you got the cool cars, you got the cool gadgets, and, like, you know, like, can always, you know, got the great, you know, he's always got those great powers. So I'm going with Batman number one. Number two, I'm going to go with Superman. I think Superman, because obviously D-Fly, you know, you put it out there, he's the Man of Steel. Obviously not going to, you know, the only thing's going to get him down is kryptonite. And number three, I'm going to go with Wonder Woman, because it's my little girl's favorite character. So, you know, I can't go against my little girl. It's got to be Wonder Woman.
Nice. If I had a superpower, I think I'd like the ability to become invisible.
That'd be great to be able to, like, you know, sit in on conversations and creep around and
all that kind of thing. And maybe to fly would be a second. But on the way out here, on my flight out here, I watched the new Fantastic Four movie, which was pretty good. Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby, Ebon Moss Backrock, who plays the Cubs in The Bear, played the Thing. And I can't remember the guy who played, Johnny Storm, the Flame, but he was really good. It was good. It was good.
What are the powers of Fantastic Four? What can they do?
So the premise of Fantastic Four is they're scientists or astronauts, and they go into space and they encounter some kind of cosmic event, and they come back. So Mr. Fantastic, Reed Richards, I think, is stretchy. Like he can stretch and all that kind of thing. Sue Storm is she can create force field and like energies and that kind of thing. The Thing turns into the Thing, and then Johnny Storm turns into the Human Flame. That's their superpowers.
I'll have to watch that movie. I remember.
I think it was the original one. It was years ago. Jessica Alba was in it with Michael Chiklis and Chris Evans, and then Ian. Uh-huh. I'm going to pronounce it, but that was really good. I really like it. Dr. Doom. Julian McMahon, who passed away, was Dr. Doom. He was the villain in that film. I think it was probably the best.
My wife is going to be mad at me because she's such a big Marvel fan. And whenever we go, she gets mad at me because I'm always asking, like, wait, what happened? What are we doing here? What's going on? So she's going to totally be upset with me when she hears this. And she's like, what? You didn't even bring any of the Marvel characters in here.
Yeah, so, you know, I base superheroes, and like Dan, I grew up on Super Friends, and I like the Legion of Doom better than the Super Friends, just because...
You were going to say that.
It's, yeah, it's, I like
the more like Lex Luthor all the time.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. So, well, you're looking more like Wonder Woman, so what do you think about that? So I'm probably going to base it, though, more off of movies and the movies I enjoy, yeah. And who do a good job with superheroes. So, like Craig, Batman, the Christian Bale Batman movies, the second one with – I think it was the second one with Heath Ledger as the Joker, which is one of the best movies I've ever seen. That was – I think that was The Dark Knight. And then I really like Spider-Man. I thought those movies were awesome. I think it was the second one in that franchise as well. All of them are really good. But when they had the character Doc Ock, I thought that was cool. Awesome. And then I'm going to go last but not least. I'll take Iron Man. I like the Iron Man movies. Robert Downey Jr. did a nice job there, and they were entertaining. And, you know, so it's always, you know, those backgrounds of how they become the superhero and then how they carry their business out is always great. And then you have, you know, you've got franchises like the Avengers where it just gets messy. Like, there's just too much going on. You know, there's too many personalities and too many of this and that. Like, you know, standalones are typically a little bit better in my book.
Yeah, there was one movie where, like, Superman was fighting Batman. I think it had Ben Affleck in it, and he was Batman. I was like, what's happening? Like, why are we even doing this? Like, let's just go.
Yeah, that's a hot mess.
Yeah,
the cash grab is what that is. It's like if I would pick Joker, would that have been a good superhero? Is that a superhero? Is Joker
not a
superhero?
He's a villain. He's not a superhero. He's like a villain.
Classic villain. So, Dix, yeah. What? Remember the Legion of Doom? Like, what was that thing that they? You know, like the Hall of Justice was this beautiful, like, building that was way too big, and there was just like five superheroes like standing around some massive computer and TV screen, and they would just walk around this empty room all the time. But what was the Legion of Doom? Was it like a horseshoe crab or something? Like, what was that would rise out
like
of a swamp?
Underwater, yeah, it was like an underwater vessel that they would be in, and, you know, it would go underneath water and come up and always have some kind of debris on it. You know, it was definitely, I mean, that's a time, man, where there was a clear delineation of good and evil.
Say that, like, these are the good guys. Over yeah. here, and then these are the super bad guys. And like, where do you want to be? Which side of the law are you going to be on? Oh, that seems like a good place to stop.
Well, wait, what about your superheroes there, tough guy?
Yeah.
Oh, you already did. You didn't.
Superman and number one, number two, and number three. But like, if I pick a second guy, I've always Spider Man's cool. You know, his origin story is great. I love when you talk about origin stories, when they first discover their powers. Yeah. Like Tobey Maguire, when he's like shooting like webs, and like, and then he's like, hey, I can like run and jump from building to building. And then they get a little too cocky with themselves and try to like beat up the bad guy. Like, that's like a common theme in like all of this. And then third, Batman, you know, Batman, Robin. Like,
so you're walking back the Aquaman.
Oh, yeah, no, I forgot about him.
You're not even talking about the Jason Momoa Aquaman. Little blonde guy from Super Friends, right?
That was weak. I always thought Aquaman was just so cool and so different. I was like, he can talk to fish and animals. Like, that's a superpower. And then he would always be riding around on his jet ski. I'm like, why wouldn't he just swim? Like, if he's so good at.
I thought he would ride on a dolphin.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember him riding.
I put him fourth. Fourth on my list. But still, like, I always thought that was cool. I'm updating my list. He's fourth. And that seems like a good place to stop. A reminder that the DeFi and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Special thanks to this week's guest, our man Craig McMichael here, and Aiden O'Neill from the Richmond Spiders. We'll be here all season. Please share this with your friends. And it's free. It doesn't cost you anything, and it helps us out. Share the love. We always love to hear from you. You can email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.